Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty. And a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. It's never an easy call with so many problems in the world to know where to direct the money that you donate when you want to help out in this world. But what I can tell you is that when you donate to CAMH, you're saving lives. We know about the opioid crisis. We know about the mental health crisis. They are doing the work. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help us treat addiction and build hope. Look, I have mixed feelings about Vice. I have always had mixed feelings about Vice. Going back 15 years ago when they were a druggy little newspaper published around the corner from my apartment in Montreal, on the one hand, they were funny and the whole thing had this exciting, nasty energy to it. But on the other, they were mean. They had a bad rep back then for fucking over writers and cartoonists. Later on, as Vice's star rose, I had different mixed feelings about them. On the one hand, it was cool to see a Canadian media company killing it, growing rapidly all around the world, making media seem not quite so hopeless as a career path. But on the other hand, their business always seemed dodgy. Their claims about their circulation, their revenue, their traffic, their valuation. Vice currently says they're worth $4 billion. To give you some context on that valuation, BuzzFeed, which is ranked twice as high as Vice in terms of their online traffic, is valued at only $1.5 billion. On the one hand, Vice is actually investing in news. They're hiring a bunch of interesting young reporters to cover a bunch of interesting topics. But on the other hand, it is weird for a news organization to have such a problematic relationship with facts. They've doctored their own history, disappearing every trace of their co-founder, Gavin McInnes. They make their reporters sign weird non-disclosure agreements. Their news videos have been edited in weird ways that suggest that their hosts, including Vice's president, Shane Smith, was in places, high conflict areas, dangerous places that he did not actually go to. On the one hand, Vice, in partnership with Rogers, is creating a ton of media jobs right here in Canada at a time when we desperately need new jobs. On the other hand, I have been hearing more and more from the people who have actually taken those jobs, and what I'm hearing is not all good. Okay, well, for the first time ever, two of the guys who run Vice Canada have agreed to talk with me about what they're up to here. We spoke at the RIDM Rhythm Documentary Festival in Montreal. You will hear bleeps in this conversation. These are not for swear words. We have redacted the name of a former Vice employee who has spoken to Canada Land under condition of anonymity. You can read more about that in an article that sort of accompanies this podcast that is live on our website right now. And you can hear my conversation with Vice in a moment. Wait for it. The This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by James Hayes, Sebastian Butt, Chris Quirk, Dan Jovicek, Katie Van Buren, Ian Grant, Richard Ebert, David Powell, and Mike Glendon. Mike, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because democracy relies on an unbiased news source that is willing to hold those in power accountable on all ends of the political and social spectrum. Canada needs this now more than ever.
This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They're not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible, heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer.
This episode is also brought to you by Giftagram, the Canadian company that makes gift giving incredibly simple. Have you not downloaded this thing yet to your iOS device? You need to do it. It makes gift giving a three-click process. One click is to download the app. The second click is to just choose the gift, and they have tested and curated a small and powerful list of great gifts. And the third click is just you click who you want to send it to. And then 3 to 5 days later, the gift arrives. Giftagram will ship your gift anywhere in Canada, anywhere that you can send a letter. You can send a Giftagram gift, and you can gift people in the United States. And I asked Giftagram's founder, Jason Reed, about that.
You know, one of the big impetuses, again, for me was, you know, my brother, I have other family in New York. So now we've launched in the U.S. So now we actually have a whole other store, kind of like there's an Amazon.com and an Amazon.ca.
Here is the part to listen closely to. Giftagram is giving listeners of this podcast $20. That is basically what they're doing, because if you download Giftagram right now and use it for the first time and use the gift code CanadaLand, they will give you $20 towards your first gift. So if your gift is $20, it's a free gift. That is how confident they are that you are going to use their app again and again to give all of your gifts this holiday season. Check it out. Giftagram in the App Store. Do it.
I'm Patrick McGuire, the head of content for Vice Canada.
And Michael Cronish, the executive vice president of television for Vice Canada.
People still call you guys Vice Magazine. I don't think the name really fits anymore. What should we call you? Is it Vice News? Is it a news organization? Is it accurate to call you guys like a new kind of advertising and marketing company? I mean, the way you guys integrate your content with the brands you work with is sort of at the heart of your business model. Is that a fair characterization? Or, like, should we, now that you're launching this new TV channel, should we think of you as a traditional media company, like a cable TV channel? How would you have people understand you?
Well, why can't it just be all of the above? Like, why is that a very hard... I'm not trying to be sarcastic, but it kind of is everything. I mean, we are an ad agency. We are a television production studio. We are a broadcaster to a certain extent. We are an editorial company. We are a news organization.
Yeah, and I mean, creatively, you know, I've been at Vice for 8 years, and I was one of two people that started the charge to do daily Canadian written content, which I remember being very exciting at the time, because we could take the Vice perspective and apply it to Canadian news on a daily basis. That evolved naturally into starting to make documentaries. You know, we did a documentary about the Chemical Valley in Sarnia. We did a documentary about Prohibition in Nunavut. And it was kind of this slow but gradual, you know, flow of Canadian storytelling. And then obviously the Rogers deal, it singularly allowed us to grow in every direction. And so now we have a dedicated Vice News team, Natalie Alcoba and Justin Ling and Hillary Beaumont and Rachel Brown and Ben. But we also have, you know, a digital production team that's making documentaries, and we have a television we have a television production group as well that feed into the Viceland network. So it is a little bit of everything.
So let's talk about that Rogers deal. I think a lot of people were surprised at the announcement, not just because Rogers CEO Guy Lawrence was wearing such a cool leather jacket when he announced that he was getting down with the kids and investing in Vice. I think people were surprised to see a $100 million investment from Rogers in a news organization when every other news organization, I mean, including Rogers publishing arms, are laying off people left and right, and news and publishing is just generally considered to be a shitty contracting business in Canada right now.
Mm-hmm.
What does Rogers expect to get out of that, and how does that fit in for Vice? Because, like, the Rogers brand is very different than the Vice brand, which might be why Rogers was interested. I'm curious from a business perspective, I'm curious from a content perspective, if we can talk about that deal.
Well, I think Rogers is probably going to get a good deal out of this.
What does Rogers want out of it?
They want to be partners with us. I mean, I think we're living in an era right now where broadcasters are cutting not only staff, but they're cutting their channels. I wouldn't be surprised in the next year, and you probably talked about this many times on your show, where we'll start to see the elimination of linear channels that have been around for over a decade.
So why are you guys making a linear channel?
Well, I mean, creatively, first of all, it's given us a really interesting opportunity to do episodic storytelling, which is a lot of fun. You know, one of the shows I'm really excited about that I developed alongside this incredibly brilliant producer we flew in from Al Jazeera, Andrea Schmidt, is called Cyber War. And it's just about how, you know, geopolitics are shaped by hacking. Ben Maku is hosting it. And we're able to do these, you know, 8 really in-depth, well, 16 now, really in-depth documentaries about something that I've always been passionate about and always liked to write about. And having that opportunity is kind of like my dream show. And then having someone who I'm such a close collaborator with, Ben, do it is a lot of fun. So.
You're talking about the creative side. I'm still trying to get my head around the...
That's what I do.
So maybe we can start with Michael. Michael, I'm just, you know, trying to get my head around this, and this is how I've been able to make it make sense to me. Rogers is incredibly cash rich right now. They've got a lot of liquidity because they've just got these incredible profits off what they've been making off of Canadian cell phone users and I would argue is a near monopoly, or at least they're part of an oligopoly in just every aspect of telecom. So, like, they've got a lot of money right now, but the future is looking really uncertain. People are cutting their cables like crazy, and there's going to be more and more competition in the telecom space. So their revenue per user is going down, and they got to have some kind of a toehold into the future. And, like, what are they going to do, build a Rogers youth brand from the ground up? So that makes sense to me that they would want to be in business with Vice. It doesn't seem like they're buying any assets or any content from Vice. It seems like they're buying the association with the Vice brand.
Well, you're exactly right. They are buying into our brand. That's it.
That's a lot of money to call yourself Vice and not Rogers.
I think it's going to be worth their time and their money.
So how does that actually play out in practice with your content? Because, you know, when you think about Vice just sort of like, fuck you, we're going to do or say whatever we want, how does that fit into, like, a Rogers structure, which is, like, a very traditional corporate media structure?
Well, I mean, most of our producers and journalists probably haven't even met anyone from Rogers. Like, they're not in the building. There's no checks and balances as to what we're reporting on. So it doesn't, I mean, even for me, who's on an executive level, I don't hear from them yeah. if they don't like a story or anything like that.
I mean, I can say that Rogers is a business partner, but editorially, Vice would not do a deal with a partner that would have an influence editorially on the content. And Rogers has been very respectful of letting Vice produce content across all the streams independently without interference.
They've been a great partner in that way, for sure.
Okay. They just, they don't have any impact?
None.
Okay, I want to return to that a little bit later, but first, like, let's talk about the TV channel, because this is a staggering undertaking. It's not like you're getting to kind of just, like, slowly level up and start with, like, one show. Like, you're going from zero to a full 24-hour station, and how many shows are you making?
32 are being made for the network right now. They'll obviously be rolled out in quarters as we launch in late February, early March. We're making 11 out of the Toronto studio right now, three of which are being made by independent producers, which is really exciting. And we're working with teams all across the country. So, you know, we've really needed to harness the strength of the production community in Canada in order to, A, find the people we need to make this stuff, and B, you know, bring us ideas when they're applicable. And, you know, we're making a lot of TV out of New York and LA as well. So it's all just basically just harnessing those three studios for the most part and a little bit of help from London to put this all together in a very short period of time.
So did I read that you're making 700 hours of television?
No, I think we're looking at, for the network, for Viceland, we're looking at a couple of hundred hours to get the ball rolling.
Okay, so you guys have been on a hiring spree in order to do that. And there's been a lot of people working for you. There's been a lot of people coming and going. And people talk. And people talk to me. And what I hear, and maybe this is not surprising, people who've been on the inside tell me that it's been chaotic. And some have even said that it's a mess.
I don't agree. I mean, you know, whoever would be talking to you probably has some sort of chip on their shoulder, I guess. But I don't see why someone who is happy would talk to you. But not just in general. You're a great guy otherwise. But you know the role you play. But no, I mean, we went from 28 to, I mean, with contracts, like, I think like 160 or 170 people. Obviously, not everyone's going to, you know, fit or work out. But you know, we're on schedule, things are being made, and it is a mix of people with TV backgrounds like Michael and me who have been in the Vice system, so to speak, for a while. And yeah, it's not easy to grow fast, but I'm quite proud of the work our team's doing, and I know there's a lot of very happy and inspired people that we work with, so...
Is it true that all of the Canadian-made content has to be approved by Eddie Moretti and Shane Smith in your New York offices?
I mean, Eddie is our, you know, creative guru, so he has input into Viceland. So, you know, and Shane obviously wants to see what we're making, but it's not really like a nanny state or anything like that. And then in digital, you know, I'm the one sort of green lighting everything for Canada, although I feel like you want to talk mainly about the TV network. There is that whole, you know, stream of what we do and a lot of documentary production and original web series that we have totally our own sandbox in.
I think that there's like more scrutiny on what you do when you're working with them. Like when you're online, when you're doing just digital video, like there's just no regulation whatsoever and you're just playing with your own money.
Mm-hmm.
But when you kind of plug in Vice to the Canadian television production industry and you start to tap the funds, like the public, quasi-public funds that everybody applies for. And is that part of how you're funding this?
It is, yeah.
Okay, so when you're using Canadian public money, I think that there are going to be questions, legitimate questions about, like, what do you make of the charge that you've just got this American media company that has found a way to spend Canadian public money on content that they're going to use? Like, what value is there in this for us when you know, like, the point of these subsidies and this funding is, to create our own television industry?
Because we have a show called Abandoned, which came to us from independent producers in Vancouver with an idea that they'd already come up with. We loved it and we made it. I mean, that's great. You know, there are show concepts that I came up with that we've greenlit and we've made. You know, there are show concepts other Canadians in the office have come up with and we've made. So there's two other independent productions that we can't announce yet, but they came to us with ideas. We loved them and we made them. This isn't, you know, Eddie emailing us, Shane emailing us, being like, make these 10 shows. You know, that's just not how it works. So it's quite the opposite, actually.
I don't mean to target you unfairly. I think that there are...
That's a good question.
But there are a lot of co-productions where you know, other countries have found a way to you know, get access to these Canadian funds. And
yeah.
Similarly, a lot of them, you could ask the same questions of, like, what we're getting out of this, like...
Yeah. I mean, we're collaborators with our team in New York, you know, and they, for what it's worth, are Canadian themselves. And no one's out here to, like, screw the system. In fact, we want to keep our doors open as much as possible. I think the challenge for independent producers, and again... You know, with 3 out of 11 series being from independent productions, that's more than 25%, if I have my math right. We want to work with as many different voices as possible because I think that's the best way to grow creatively and to show it, you know, a diversity. But I think one of the challenges with independent producers is that we do have a specific POV. It's very hard to define. I mean, something I said to you earlier was one of the ways we sort of discern our pitches is if another network were to commission this, we probably wouldn't be interested. So that's one of the, you know, check boxes we have editorially, and some people, you know, they're not really used to that. I feel like a lot of meetings, you know, I've never really been on that other side of the fence shopping projects around, but I think we deal with producers in a way that maybe people aren't used to in Canada. So there's a bit of a learning curve, but I expect as we, you know, establish our business and people get to know Viceland a bit more, we'll be working with even more and more people from the quote unquote outside.
There's a lot of interest in Vice as a business because when you see a model that's working, everybody wants to understand how it's working and what's actually behind the curtain. Like converting audience, converting clicks, converting views into enough money to make really high quality content, you know, to do journalism is a very tricky problem that other companies are not having that much success with. So what people are wondering about Vice is the revenue there? Is it actually sustainable and profitable in such a way that it actually justifies this? I think that Shane Smith said it's a $4 billion valuation. And, you know, we don't really know what your revenue is or what your traffic is like. And this might be a question that, you know, I need to ask Shane Smith.
You should email him and ask him.
I'm sure I'll get a speedy reply. Okay, but as much as you're able to talk about this, and maybe this is a question for you, Michael, like, what can you tell us about what success would mean, what advertisers in Canada are hoping to get out of this, what Rogers could get out of this to justify the $100 million spend? And is it just Rogers' money? Like, is Vice putting any of its own money into this?
Of course. Vice is a partner and an investor in this business. So we're in it together. Rogers and Vice are complete partners, business partners in this endeavor. I don't know if I can really...
Are you asking if you have revenue numbers per year? Yeah.
What's the traffic? Like, what does success mean? Like, is there anything the public can see?
Well, I mean, Vice isn't a public company per se. So, I don't think Vice doesn't have to answer to public shareholders in that sense. I mean, I think that right now what we're concentrating on is really like the critical acclaim that we may or may not get from the content that we're producing and the ratings, The ratings drive the advertising dollars, so there's no mystery to that business. We'll see where we land. What we do bring is it's not just the Vice brand, but it's Vice digital world, which is something that I think most traditional linear broadcasters are only now trying to figure out how to monetize. Well, we've already got that business. It is our core business. We're a digital company. So for us to go back and forth between those two platforms, let alone mobile and film and magazine, there's a lot of room for us to sort of drive this content.
Patrick, I wanted to ask you about the work culture. A lot's been said about it by Vice employees. One word used by a Vice employee to describe Vice is a sweatshop. And another term used by that same person is that it's a cult.
Very different things. I mean, sweatshop, okay. Like, I don't personally feel like our employees have that experience. People work really hard. There are a lot of young people, and there's a lot of people that are really excited to work at Vice, which I think is where the cult part comes in. Like, there's that parody account, like, called I Work at Vice, and I think it's just based off of people that tell people they work at Vice too often. I mean, there are Vice rings that a lot of Vice employees wear. So, yeah, I mean, I don't feel like it's a sweatshop, and I feel like it is a bit of a cult.
The Vice employee that I was quoting back there, by the way, is Shane Smith.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. I don't know. He really called it a sweatshop? I find that hard to believe.
He called it a sweatshop for Trustafarians.
Okay. All right. I'm not a trust fund kid.
But people are so excited to be working for Vice that the criticism has been that they'll work for very low wages and they'll work crazy hours.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think as we were growing economically, it was a little more challenging. But it's I think it's a pretty great place to work right now more than ever. So I really don't have any complaints.
Shane also said that Vice is an incestuous family.
Yeah, that's true too.
Look, I want to be fair when talking about Vice, and I don't think it's fair to necessarily judge you guys based on what Vice was like 15 or 20 years ago. Like, I don't think it's fair to bring up, like, an article once in Vice about, I don't know, like, an interview with a plate of spaghetti, and then take a swipe at your news coverage on that basis. Like, you know, your founders talk openly about Vice growing up and taking on news coverage in earnest. So I think that a more contemporary critique and maybe a more fair critique that has come up is people have described your news coverage as conflict porn. That you guys are sort of like parachuting somebody with a lot of tattoos into some third world conflict zone and flip on a camera and go, holy shit, shit is fucked up over here. Look at this crazy thing. Look at this child eating a rat.
Right.
And then they go home. I do think that that is a fair criticism, but, you know, I think that you have to contextualize that with what news has always done.
Sure.
So I think that it's not about singling you guys out entirely, but is it something that we can talk about where like... you can recognize that Vice has erred, and is it something you're trying to kind of correct or do differently?
I don't know if I would call it an error, but I do think that the level of our storytelling has become more complex and sophisticated as we've grown. You know, we have multiple editorial brands. Like, Vice News has a very distinct voice from Vice. Broadly has a very distinct voice from, you know, well, you can't really compare it to anything else, but to Vice, let's say. You know, I think, you know, we've got veteran journalists working with us. Our own journalists have learned a lot more about the world just through, you know, like Eddie says, we went to production school in public, you know, and I think that we are progressing out of that sort of like, holy shit, look at this kind of mode, because we want to do better too. And I think that's sort of the innate human response to seeing something complicated that people have. I think that it's as parodyable as it has become with things like, you know, the IFC drones show or what Onion tried to do with Edge. I think there's a genuine response to going into these places for the first time, and now, you know, we are doing, like, you'll see some of these series we have for Viceland. Like, they are no joke. Like,
yeah.
I brought up Cyber War before because it's my passion project, but we also have a series called Terror that Sarush is doing, and it's basically like, you know, an encyclopedic guide to five of the most, you know, notorious terrorist groups in the world. And these are very serious stories with not many holy shit, that's crazy, poking with a stick, whoop, type moments. So
what the Onion tried to do with Edge, you sassy little thing.
Well, was it successful? I mean, I thought it was funny.
I don't know. What's successful for the Onion? I mean, it was funny.
It was. I just thought it was going to be a persistent vertical, and it seems to have kind of fallen by the wayside.
Oh, I didn't know that they were going to do that all the time?
I don't know. It felt that way because they were launching these parody accounts, and maybe it was supposed to be a one-off, but I don't know. Anyway, I love the Onion.
Look, Vice is asked to be taken seriously as a news organization. I think it's right. I think you should be taken seriously. You're making a serious investment in news. You're hiring a lot of reporters. You're putting resources behind it. You're directing your audience to news. But in taking you seriously, like, do you feel that it's fair to ask the same questions of Vice that I would any other news organization? Like, does that sound right to you?
Of course.
Okay, so in taking you seriously, like, the issues that I ask of any news organization are about, you know, accuracy, and about independence. And so if we can circle back to the Rogers partnership, you mentioned earlier that Rogers has no bearing on your editorial.
100% zero bearing on the content. I know it'll blow your mind, but I have not been in one meeting where any executive has come over and said, we would prefer if you did this, or we would prefer if you didn't do that. It has never happened, and it won't happen.
I have to ask you about something. Carly Lewis is someone who's worked for you.
Mm-hmm.
So she forwarded me this email that she got from the Vice employee who was editing a piece that she was writing for you about sexual harassment and sexual abuse in the Canadian media.
Okay.
Here's a copy of it. The part that I've highlighted here is in reference, Carly tells me, to in her original draft, she wrote about sexism that she experienced when she was working for a different Rogers company. And so I'm going to read from the email that this Vice employee sent to Carly. We had to cut that Rogers section simply because we're in transition into a relationship with them now and don't want to make that any rockier than it has to be.
He actually wasn't an editor. He's a staff writer. So that was an opinion that was definitely not accurate. I remember that story. It was a flimsy example. It was a story mainly about the CBC, and she had one fairly unfounded example about Rogers. If it was any other company, you know, we wouldn't have included it just because it wasn't very well reported. So that's all it is. And this was not an opinion that was, you know, coming from me or any editor.
Wasn't the handling editor of that piece?
No.
So why was she reporting to him? And why would he say that? Why would he think that he had to protect the relationship between Vice and Rogers?
I'm not sure. He doesn't work with the company anymore, so...
And you're saying that it's because her reporting was flimsy?
On that particular example. It was a tight piece otherwise.
So you're saying that it was that the Rogers bit was cut because the reporting was flimsy, but like she also includes anecdote after anecdote about sexism and sexual harassment at the CBC that seemed to also rely on just one source. And those ones were printed.
Well, because there were a lot of them, you know? Like, there was one throwaway example here that we didn't feel was well reported.
I tell you, Patrick, the trouble here is that what these emails seem to document is something that happens in just about every news organization at one point or another. The line between church and state, ownership influence on content, advertiser influence on content, there's always going to be mistakes made, and those lines get blurred.
Mm-hmm.
But when it happens in other news organizations, there's like BuzzFeed had a controversy over stories, I think, that got pulled because they were critical of Dove, and Dove was an advertiser. And when that got revealed, Ben Smith, the editor of BuzzFeed, said, "We screwed up completely." He took responsibility for it, and he gave this extensive interview. He gave more information than anyone wanted to know about how the editorial process and the advertising process works at BuzzFeed.
Mm.
But Vice has a history, and I do wonder about the culture of Vice in this context, because there was a former Vice employee in the States who blew the whistle on some internal emails where he was told that any story that involved a brand had to be run up a flagpole for approval. There's factual issues with Shane Smith saying that he started off his career as an AP, Associated Press stringer, filing stories in Croatia. There is no evidence that ever happened. He's never spoken to that. He never had like a moment like Brian Williams had where he said, you know, got caught on some inconsistencies and owned up to them. And, you know, news is the accountability business, it's the accuracy business. There's got to be accountability, don't you think? I mean, right now you're telling me that this was fault and this was Carly's fault. Is that like the level of accountability that we can expect from Vice Canada?
No, I'm not saying it's their fault. I'm just saying that he was not an editor. You can see it in his title right here. He wasn't editing her piece. And this is not representative of the stance we took on the story.
But why would he say that? Why would he say that you guys were protecting the Rogers relationship? How would he even have that idea in his head if it wasn't true?
I don't know. But it's not an opinion that I had at the time. I remember the piece. We ran the piece. You know, again, it was a very well constructed story about the CBC, and we decided to, you know, keep that focus on the CBC.
And you guys don't feel that there's ever been an instance of Rogers influence or advertiser influence that has ever been a problem for you guys?
No, honestly, no. And like I said, I don't think most of our journalists have even, you know, encountered someone from the Rogers side. They don't influence what we're doing, and they don't have any notes on the kind of reporting we do. You know, like, we're a big company. It's hard to be held accountable for, you know, everyone and everything they're throwing out there in email. But, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Like, if I'm not trying to protect something or hide something here, you've got someone who's obviously been scorned and has left the company showing you something from someone who was speaking, you know, for the department when they weren't actually in that position to do so. So,
okay. Do you think these are fair questions to ask you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they're fair, but I think, I mean, just again, to be clear, like, Patrick is in charge of editorial advice. And so, you know, if he's telling you that there is no influence from Rogers, and I'm telling you, like, you can either accept it or you can reject it. But that is really the case. No, I cannot think of one moment where we have felt any pressure from the outside to make decisions internally. He makes his own decisions about what he wants to cover, what he thinks is a valid story for Vice News, Vice.com. But that is not, there is no pressure from the outside of the ecosystem of Vice.
Yeah, I don't, I'm not making any claim that somebody from Rogers, you know, picked up a phone and made a call about Carly's piece. Or, I mean, you know, like, that's, it's self-censorship is what often happens, is that people in newsrooms are cognizant of who ownership is or who the partners are, and they make their decisions about what to cover or what not to cover, you know, on that basis. And this is a document that I take it that you guys, you know, don't accept that it says anything larger about Vice. And, you know, we'll put it on our website so people can make up their own minds.
Yeah, like, if someone came to me with some incredibly well-reported story that showed something at any of our partners was seriously wrong, that's not something I would hesitate to run. But, you know, the reporting has to be there.
Jesse, that's time.
Guys, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks,
okay.
Jesse.
That is your Canada Land Show. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me always at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read them all and I respond when I can. We are on Twitter at Canada Land. Our website is canadalandshow.com, where you will find our article about Vice that will give you some more context on what was discussed on today's show, and where you can also sign up for Not Sorry, our weekly newsletter. Our crowdfunding site is at patreon.com/CanadaLand. The next episode of Canada Land Commons will be up on Tuesday, and the next episode of Shortcuts will be up on Thursday. I make this show with Katie Jensen. If you like this show, please support it.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.